feel like maybe there's a need to completely review the categories in MarTech. When you look at the MarTech 5000, stuff like that, I don't agree with those categories.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise the glass. I'm thrilled to be joined by Angus Edwardson, co-founder of Gather Content by Bynder, to discuss the evolution of content operations. Angus, thanks so much for being here today.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Angus, I know Gather Content joined the Bynder family in 2022. I have to imagine that was quite the experience. Still probably feels relatively fresh, I would imagine. But before we get into the conversation, I'd love to just, in your own words, hear a little bit more about your background and your journey to Gather Content and even from Gather Content into Bynder.
Yeah, so I guess keeping it fairly recent, specific to Gather Content, like we started Gather Content about 10 years ago. Oh, sorry, 12 years ago, actually, from an agency in the northeast of Scotland. Primarily focused on helping agencies gather content, quite literally. That's why it's got that imaginative name for website builds. We're primarily working with oil industries or larger enterprises. And yeah, we always had that same experience of people sending massive Word documents to us and asking them to like turn it into a website. We literally once had someone turn up to our office with a full, like a box full of like handwritten scribbles. I think there was like genuinely once there was a crayon drawing and they said like, turn it into a website. Can you put it in a CMS? So that's like the story of Gather Content. We essentially set out to solve that problem. We'd evolved into being loads of strange positioning, marketing angles. We had like called ourselves a pre-CMS for a while and started being super anti-CMS. I don't know really why we chose to pick a fight with CMSs, but it was all kind of about solving problems that CMSs didn't do. And that evolved into like content operations, or like upstream content operations that was more about, kind of happened in parallel with a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about today, I guess, about like the evolution of the content strategist role and the evolution of content is becoming more of a strategic investment for organizations. So yeah, it's been amazing to be part of that journey and part of that kind of community. Fast forwarding to about 2 years ago, we were acquired by Bynder as a strategic acquisition to extend the DAM offering. They're the leading digital asset management platform out there for anyone that's not aware of Bynder, working with some amazing organizations around the world to help scale up the production and the management of brand assets. So that's been a big change for me personally, like moving from being like a 25 person startup to being a big, huge leader in the market with over 500 employees based all around the world. So that's kind of brings me to where I'm now. My responsibilities now in Bynder, I'm not just responsible for Gather Content as a platform, which has been rebranded to Content Workflow, but I'm also the group product manager for 5 or 6 other products in Bynder, a lot of the modules, a lot of the sort of adjacent solutions to the core digital asset management offering. So my background is more on like the product side and the technology side, but through my role in Gather Content, I spend a lot of time doing like research, being very customer facing, and in lots of different roles, I spend a lot of time just understanding our customers and the problems they were trying to solve. Yeah, that's a little bit about me. I'm from Scotland originally, and now based in France.
As somebody who's made the conscious decision to call their business The Juice, and I get outbound emails daily asking about our juicing business, I appreciate the simplicity of calling it Gather Content, and we've seen a lot of different content at The Juice, but we haven't seen crayon yet. So you've got me one up there in terms of what you've seen. This is the Content Cocktail Hour, and we always like to start before we get into the juiciest part of the conversation by asking what you're enjoying drinking nowadays.
We were joking about this beforehand. This question overwhelmed me, I think, more than any content-related professional question I've ever been asked. Any single drink you name, I could probably talk about it for 30 minutes, genuinely, I think. Also, it's an interesting way to talk about my sort of origins and my life, because I'm from Scotland, so really into whiskey. Did a competition tasting whiskey with my family last year and won it. My nerding abilities there by blind tasting lots of whiskeys. I lived in China for a year, so got really into green tea through that. My little brother is a brewer, so through the back of that, to beer. So I could talk about beer for hours. There's once a year I drank 365 different beers in a year as some sort of arbitrary challenge I set myself. And now I live in France, so I got really into wine. Wine is like the ultimate nerd, I think, especially for someone that's into content and taxonomy. Wine is like the ultimate taxonomy complex content thing because everything's hierarchical and regulated and all these different categories, I think. I think a dream I would have would build a information architecture for wine would be a good sub-project, but yeah, I live in Lyon, which is just south of Beaujolais, just north of the Rhone Valley, not far from Burgundy, not far from Jura as well. So My recent thing is probably wine. I'm a nerd about that. But also, I really into coffee.
There we go. That's incredible. We winded from whiskey to beer to green tea to wine and to coffee. I think we covered all the bases. And I appreciate the tie-in.
Right now, I'm drinking a glass of water for some reason.
All of that, and you're drinking water. I love it. Speaking of nerding out, all right, let's start to nerd out about content operation. So I mentioned in the introduction kind of the evolution of content operations, maybe a word we throw around too flippantly as marketers, but you've been involved really since the beginning of content operations. And now you're kind of building the future of content operations with Bynder. Can you walk us through kind of that process up to this point, that journey up to this point, and now what you're seeing take place?
Yeah, definitely. My experience is maybe a specific parallel or a specific work stream of the evolution of content operations. But for me, it all started from an agency perspective where we were really seeing like at the start, arguably at the start of people really doing the first stage of digital transformation, when they were maybe building their first real web presence. Enterprises were really doing the initial steps of digital transformation. And there was a huge bias to thinking about design and visualization before thinking about content. And I remember seeing, this is maybe about 10, 15, probably 15 years ago, like I started witnessing this emergence of like content strategy as a discipline. But it always felt like a kind of basement job. If people in the basement kind of not really given much attention, not really invested in very heavily. You saw companies like eBay doing a really great job with technical authoring. I think that came from Stanford when they introduced XML. So they started thinking about like large scale content management, because eBay is obviously like a digital first company. They started there, and that huge amount of documentation to manage. But for us, working more with like companies that are slightly newer to the web, they were so biased to design. They started thinking about like how their website was going to look and all that stuff before thinking about the content they needed to produce. And yeah, I feel like that was the kind of emergence of content strategy, saying, hey, maybe we should think about content first design. And that was the first, I'd say, headline that kind of got me interested in it. I wrote some articles and talked quite a lot about content first design. And again, it was pretty aggressive. It was kind of like fighting against a problem, like a lot of critique for designers. The metaphor we often used there was the equivalent of not doing content first design was a bit like designing a restaurant menu, spending ages thinking about the colors and the layout before you even know what food the restaurant serves. So like, we still always be like, okay, let's like talk about what your business is actually doing. Let's talk about the architecture of your business. And I guess information architecture became a bigger thing at that point, with a lot of, I think, the O'Reilly book on information architecture came out around then. So yeah, for me, that's the first stage, is when content strategy started becoming a thing and we started talking about content first design. Then obviously huge waves of digital transformation led to content like projects like gov.uk, if you're familiar with that. It was a huge shift with people like Sarah Winters really pushing for content design, I guess, like really thinking about content as a fundamental component of a business, as a core offering, and as a way that people interact with what we're doing before, like regardless of how it looks, really thinking purely about content as a business asset, I guess, was the transformation. Well, I know there's a guy called Nazarbina that talked a lot about that, about treating content as a product. And that was a big shift. Like banking, for example, they started thinking, I was working a lot with big banks around the world, and they started talking a lot about treating content as a product. And for me, that was a kind of double-edged sword, because content teams started being treated like product teams in the same sense as my background being in product management. I found that really interesting, because suddenly all these people were shouting for attention for content, and suddenly then they were being asked, okay, like, well, what's the ROI for content? And that's, you know, that's a thing in marketing in general. We started being, okay, like, I'm going to do a campaign to promote this thing, or I'm going to invest in doing a big AI project or IA project or an audit or a migration. You know, okay, well, like, why? What's the business impact? And that's kind of, I think, as someone's worked in product, we've always been asked that. Are you building a new feature? Well, why? How much is it going to cost, and what's it going to generate? Or who are you targeting? What are the personas, and how do you structure your team? And all these standards start being developed, I think, for content at that point, and maybe for digital marketing in general. I'd be interested in your opinion there.
I always cringe a little bit when I see, you know, it's very popular, it's very easy to say, like, create content that converts. And like, that's fine. You should have conversion in mind when you're creating content. But the reality is, like, content in and of itself does not convert. We actually see on our platform the average time from a content touch point to a deal being closed won or closed loss is 162 days, which is about 6 months, right? So like, great content doesn't convert. I always say great content educates and entertains, and something else along the way helps move them to conversion. And then we actually see in that 162 days, the average number of content touch points, as we define it as marketing content, is 2.2 pieces of content. So I totally agree. Content as a product is cool because it uplevels, I think, how the rest of the organization looks at content, but it's a double-edged sword, just as you're referencing, because then you get into these conversations of what's the ROI, and people, want to measure ROI and this immediacy that is not why we should be creating content, in my opinion.
Do you think that's unrealistic then? Yeah, I see that as well. Like sometimes unrealistic expectations are put on content teams too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's really, but I guess like then maybe, I don't know, about 5 years ago, people started, for me, talking about content operations and started seeing that happen a lot. And it's something we really positioned our Gather content around as a product. Finally felt like, okay, we can explain the problem we're trying to solve with a product. It's content operations. It's everything that happens kind of, we said it, everything happens before the CMS with people, processes, and technology. Before the content gets published and out there, like as a society, arguably, we're always focused on that last mile. But we found that the majority of the investment and the problems with content and with marketing in general are all happening like before that delivery channel. And there wasn't, first for us, there wasn't many technologies focused on that. Most people were using Word documents and project management tools and spreadsheets to paste stuff into channels. And, you know, in the meantime, we're going to conferences and hear people saying like, I'm going to do multi-channel, omni-channel content reuse and personalization. You're like, how are you going to do that in a spreadsheet? There's this huge disconnect between what we were talking about wanting to do, what CMSs were talking about doing, and not just CMSs, but like any downstream delivery tool, and what we as a practice were able to do upstream. So for me, like that was the kind of trigger for content operations being talked about. And yeah, like I said, like we defined it as this combination of people, process, and technology that were required to get content produced and published to these downstream channels. In the same period of time, I think we saw like content suddenly raised to C-suite level investment question. COVID caused that to happen massively suddenly when like we did an insurance company from the Middle East that was doing 80% of their sales in person, and that just went away overnight. You know, we better have a digital strategy then. You know, we worked a lot with higher ed as well, and the ones that succeeded during COVID were the ones that innovated the quickest with content, the ones that had the most effective content operations. They were able to create, like, for example, virtual open days in universities or a digital version of their course book, the thing that explained all the solutions that they offered. So for me, that was like the point in which suddenly content became a strategic investment at C-suite level. And then fast forwarding to, I guess, like today, the conversations I'm having in Bynder about the, we're working with really large scale enterprises in Bynder, and the way that they're talking about content is fascinating, because it's not like I want to get to market quicker in order to publish a blog post on Tuesday rather than Monday. That's kind of how I used to think of it sometimes. Oh, yeah. I want to publish a website a bit quicker. They're talking about true strategic market strategy and how content is going to be able to do that. For example, like we're working with this large car manufacturing company, which I can't name, but their whole investment in content operations was based on being the first to market with electronic vehicles. And suddenly that's a whole different level. What was sort of worldwide market analysis. And they were strategically investing in composable stack versus a suite. So they're moving from Adobe, like a big suite of integrated tools, to something that more like contentful integrated with Bynder. Hypothesis being it'll speed up time to market. But it wasn't about just moving quicker on a day-to-day basis. It was about being the first to market truly in this new market that was emerging. And that was the kind of, you know, life or death for them as a company, because if they weren't, another car company would get there first and they'd be considered the market leader in electronic vehicles. For me, like that suddenly they're talking about that on every level of that business, and that investment in content and content technology and people and processes suddenly very visceral and powerful. So that's why I think content operations as a kind of subject matter too.
Yeah, I think that's such a cool like lens shift of people hear the word just operations, let alone content operations. I think we're thinking about process and efficiencies and organization. But then when you kind of shift the lens on it, and all that means speed is sexy. Speed is how you win. And I think shifting that lens a little bit just on, hey, your content operations will allow you to be faster and win faster. That I think is how you get something prioritized inside of a business. Definitely not us at The Juice, but maybe somebody who's not as sophisticated as it comes to content operations. What's the process for somebody who, you know, maybe they are using the spreadsheet or they are using the project management tool? How would you encourage them to think broader and bigger about their own content operations?
It's a good question, because I had the same conclusion sometimes where we talk about these like big, crazy abstract ideas about content. And then often at conferences and things, then someone's like, what do you do when you go to work on Monday? What are you actually going to do is like a first step in this. A digital transformation is kind of the same. Mm-hmm. I don't have permission to rip out my CMS. So what can I really do today to change things? And for me, we started actually doing this interesting exercise as a customer research process and gather content. We do it in Bynder now. Now we do it as a workshop, actually, sometimes at events. And it's a really simple way we map out content operations. So we just start by analyzing one content type. So for example, it might be like, okay, like we produce articles. I always call it like, where does your content come from? And so we'll choose an article. And then we'll map out three dots. We do it like Miro or an Illustrator or something. You can do it in person, is nice too. And you just map out either people, processes, and technology as different colored dots. And then you just map out the origin story of that piece of content, looking at where it comes from. And if it's, I've got some crazy, really amazing, almost artistic looking diagrams of like how a university produces an email. And suddenly it was always a really enlightening process for them, because they'll say like, okay, like we've got the DAM, and then we copy and paste that, and then it's on a drive folder, and then it gets transferred to Notepad because someone's scared of using the CRM and right. They don't know how to edit HTML. So then they call in this other person, and you just notice inefficiencies. And you could do one small change. You could be like, okay, we're going to maybe stop using drive folders and move it to the DAM, or introduce a new approval process to speed things up. I don't think you need to like boil the ocean and change everything all at once. It's more about, for me, step one is the analysis at a simple level. You could spend an hour doing that with a few of your colleagues and just understand like what is it that's involved.
So much of that becomes habit over time of a business, or just status quo. You know, we're doing it that way because that's the way we've always done it. But I think that exercise of actually stopping and pausing and literally drawing it out, I can imagine that being very powerful. I'm thinking that through now for ourselves. There's a few like checkpoints along the way that's like, man, do we really need to be doing that? Or is that just the way we've always operated?
It kind of goes back to the content as a product. Product teams have been doing that. Technology teams, DevOps. When you're talking about content ops, you think about DevOps or engineering operations, like Agile is all, most product teams have a diagram that shows their operating practice. Like in Binder, we have a 6-week cycle, 2-week sprint, approval process, go-to-market review. It's all pretty well defined. And I guess it's just about content teams maybe doing the same thing.
Who owns content operations?
Good question. Yeah, I don't know. I was always really happy when I saw the first, I saw a VP of content operations once. A company we've worked with for a long time, LPL Financial. For me, they're like really representative of kind of super modern content team. They've got like a dedicated taxonomy officer. They've got content designers, governance officers, and they have a VP of content operations. So I guess that's a standard they're working towards maybe, or proposing, but I don't think there is probably a standard. And then for me, the VP of content operations often sits between the technology and marketing. Maybe a slightly technical person that understands the technology stack, but then also empathizes with the people and what they're trying to do to some degree.
Marketing ops is a pretty standard role, but there's a lot under their umbrella. But I always say content's kind of the oxygen for the marketing organization. And so it's interesting, you know, I would think if marketing ops is managing a lot of different processes across marketing, sales, connecting marketing and sales, it makes sense for maybe content ops to roll into that as a piece of that as well. But yeah, it's really, you know, you got to have everybody aligned.
I would agree. The VP of content operations, typically FC reports to the CMO.
Yeah,
it would make sense for them to, if there's a VP of marketing ops, to be their parallel or umbrella.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, we can't have a conversation in 2024 about marketing without talking about AI. What is AI doing to content operations, or what should we all be on the lookout for as it continues to accelerate everything we're doing?
Good question. And yeah, it's interesting. So when I was thinking about the different stages that we've seen in content operations, I was wondering if, would you say that AI is the next phase? Well, we talked about this previously in the past when we've met, and it seems like we both agree it's probably not specific. Like AI is like an improver of existing things rather than a completely new era that we're entering at the moment. One interesting hypothesis I would have, and something that we see a little bit of evidence for, is AI allows marketers to become a bit more strategic because it automates a lot of the processes that can sometimes hold us back or can burn a lot of time. We've sort of had this funny analogy of a bit like, if you think of like old cars, you're super involved in the mechanics of the car. Mm-hmm. And as cars have evolved, we've taken arguably a more strategic role with how we operate them, to the point where you order an Uber and say, I want to go from here to here. And if you think about spaceships and sci-fi, they're also kind of like that. You just go to a new star system or whatever. An interesting, quite positive view of what AI will do for marketing, I think, is that we'll put marketers in that kind of spaceship seat and to allow us to be like, yeah, I want to go to market here with these criteria, maybe for this persona. And then the content operations largely will be potentially automated by AI to a large percentage. And we're doing a lot of that stuff in Binder. We've invested a huge amount over the last 18 months in AI, starting primarily with efficiency gains rather than full automation, like helping search with OCR, for example, so you can search for images based on text within them, face recognition, things like that. And now we've done quite a lot of work with AI content generation, translation and stuff, because typically they're less controversial use cases, which has been a big kind of principle we've heard when we've been research into AI with our customers. Obviously, there's a bit of apprehension about the implementation of AI, but now we're seeing as a lot of companies have maybe policies around AI or deeper understanding of it, or even dedicated roles, they're starting to open up to more like generative AI or full kind of automation of different processes, which I think the positive angle is that does allow marketers to become more strategic in what we're trying to do.
I love that perspective of like, it actually makes the human context and the human strategy that much more powerful because it automates some of the other stuff. And I think you'll see even like more separation between those two. And again, just continuing to make the strategic context that much more valuable that marketers are able to create.
Agree. Yeah. Like you said as well, like the more practically short term, I've done a few webinars on AI with different marketers as well. One theme that we had, which was essentially that the two things that they're focusing on from like a content strategy or marketing strategy point of view is real human connection will always be like this. We can't really replace this experience of us talking to each other. That's going to be maybe more meaningful if there's a lot of artificial stuff around us.
Yeah.
And also like true unique ideas for the moment, at least like having really unique ideas and opinions. So we've seen a lot of content strategists shifting the focus of their content teams to say, okay, like focus on unique ideas, on arguments, on things that are original. And we'll use AI to create that in 20 languages tomorrow. And we'll create lots of different variations. We'll create blog posts, social media campaigns, because that's the automation part. But we can focus on creativity and unique ideas and human connection.
Yeah, I've been saying a lot very similar to that, like use your proprietary data. Because that's something AI can't replicate, right? Is whatever proprietary data you, your product, your team generates, that's irreplaceable. But then I love that perspective. And then apply the AI to the operational efficiencies. But yeah, bullseye, right? Like again, it allows that kind of expertise to be the core of everything you're doing. And then the delivery of that expertise can become more efficient because of AI. And that car analogy is so good, you know? People used to have to like manually start engines and then they had to turn a key and now you get in every car and you're just pushing a button. So I think that analogy is spot on.
It's also not negative. Like if you think about it, would you get in a plane today that didn't have a robot in it assisting the direction and the stuff on it, the weather analysis?
God, no.
You probably wouldn't feel very comfortable. And so like there's sometimes a negative connotation with collaborating with AI, but if we really think about like co-piloting with AI in a responsible, controlled and like conscious way, then maybe that's a better analogy for how to look at it as well, like co-piloting, where we're leaning into the best of both. Like AI can analyze the weather, never sleeps. The human can make a difficult decision or can like communicate maybe with the passengers.
Yeah, that's so good. I love that plane analogy.
I've got loads of analogies today.
I love it. I love it. And we've got another episode to record on all of your different drinks and beverages. So I look forward to that.
A parallel podcast called Angus's Drink Nerding.
I love it. I love it. We always like asking our guests at the end, what is one unpopular opinion you have in either the marketing or the content space?
It doesn't sit right with me the way that we use content management systems and the way that teams kind of are operating. Yeah, I don't know. It's not a very clear opinion. I feel like we need to rethink the way that we position a lot of MarTech. It's funny because we're all marketers, like coming from the vendor side. We struggled so long to how to position what Gather Content was. Content management systems and marketing, like CMPs and CRMs and stuff, I think we need to all get in a room and just agree on some simpler positioning because there's some really weird ways that we explain the solutions and what they're solving. So I feel like maybe there's a need to completely review the categories in MarTech. When you look at the MarTech 5000 and stuff like that, I don't agree with those categories. Maybe that's the controversial
thing. There you go. And maybe following up on that, one question I meant to ask earlier and didn't get to, what's been the biggest eye-opening piece of going from a 25-person startup to an enterprise organization? Like, has there been anything from a content or marketing perspective that's really been eye-opening along that kind of transition?
I'd say like the scale of customers and the way that Binder works with customers is pretty amazing. Like, I've never experienced that before. I always thought we were really customer-centric because we were a startup, and arguably we had the opportunity like where we could have founders and things speaking to the customers more often. And so it felt more like a close relationship. But in reality, I think the way that Binder works with customers and the scale of the customers they're working with, the kind of calls them on in the discussions and the structure of the way that we support customers, it's just fascinating. I thought I kind of understood enterprise before, and now I really see what enterprise is like, both from a service perspective, from a customer support perspective, and just from like an understanding customer needs perspective. So that's been learned a huge amount by that already.
That's really cool. Yeah, I love that. Customer closeness also can drive a lot of content to bring it full circle there. I've seen that happen before several times over.
Yeah, I always think like for me, that's one of the best things when I was always in a generalist role and I still really like having a role where I'm doing both product and customer facing or working with customers on a really regular basis, because you always have kind of anecdotes like today's conversation. Like I got loads of recent anecdotes that allow me to rationalize decisions or maybe making the product roadmap, or equally just to articulate the argument by maybe positioning and things like that. So to me, that's like a fundamental part of how we need to operate as people.
That's really good. Yeah. People are the core of everything. If people want to learn more from you or more about Binder, what's the best way to do that?
You're welcome to reach out to me personally on LinkedIn, Angus Edwardson, or contact Binder. If you ever want to learn about Binder, go to our website, or there's loads of resources there as well. We've got a huge amount of resources on content operations. As part of the Gather Content acquisition, we've integrated a huge resource library on content operations, loads of really original content there, webinar recordings and things like that. And we're continuing to do a lot of research into content operations and try and share that with our customers and the community in general. So yeah, check out our resources and things like that, and feel free to reach out personally. Talk about drinks, maybe.
I love that. Well, Angus, thank you so much for joining the Content Cocktail Hour. If you want to learn more from Angus, connect with him on LinkedIn or visit binder.com to learn more about Binder. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We'll see you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.